And he thought for a moment and he said, no. And she said, well, it's not about to be different now. But it was just, she was just perfectly calm, but it was just, I don't really care. This is what's happening. And the magnetism of it, though, was just exactly what it needed to be. And, you know, now that's not the only example, but yes, let's show.
Well, you know, I can see that with a younger child. But I think what is becoming more complicated is when you're working with a teenager, and if you stop pushing, they're more likely to step forward and own it. As, so it's more of a, the magnetism, I think, is even more important, but it's also just waiting and letting it go.
Well, you have,
really hard to do.
Well, it's a lot the same as...
It's really gross. I mean, the stakes are higher when they're older. I mean, they're really disgusting.
Well, I have to again say that I can give you general advice, but I can't really call it to the focus because I haven't lived through it. But let me just say this, a few things that I do know. It still has a lot to do with magnetism. It has a lot to do with you yourself looking at it in a long rhythm, with you yourself choosing your battles very carefully, and using a lot more prayer than just coercion, and a lot more surrendering of your child into God's hands. I'll tell you a very interesting story between a friend of mine and her son. Very beautiful boy. I mean, she raised him pretty much by herself, a little single mom, you know, a little bit of involvement from the dad, but mostly herself. And he's a good child, though, so it wasn't really like, you know, it wasn't like what some people really have to face. But she had always done, did I tell you this last week? She always would pray for him a lot, and she would do affirmations for him. You know, in prayer, she would say affirmations and visualize him. He got to be 14. He became, you know, really rebellious, and was just fight with her all the time about everything. So she backed off and backed off and backed off, but she was still saying those affirmations for him. Then one day she realized that she was still pushing on him. And so she started, instead, she changed her prayer, you know, to Divine Mother, you sent him to me. He's always been your child. You better take care of him now. And when she, really. And when she stopped doing those affirmations, he stopped being so rebellious. It was like he still felt her trying to make him into something. And so it was just like inside herself. And of course, it must be, I have to say, exceedingly difficult to be detached. But nonetheless, these are not your children. You know, they're people who come to stay with you. And they stay with you for a little while. I mean, be fair about it. How many of us are still living in our childhoods? You know? Like, you know, our parents are there and they meant something to us and we love them and so on, but long time ago we stepped out of our childhood and became ourselves, you know? And yes, our childhood meant something to us, but we've had millions of incarnations. And in all those incarnations we had parents, and in all those incarnations we lived at least a little while with our parents, but it's, you know, it's like this big compared to the momentum and the destiny that soul is going through. So you have to, whenever you're beginning to feel overexcited about this moment, you have to stand back and say, who am I kidding? Now, that is not an excuse to abdicate your responsibility, but it's definitely a way to calm yourself down. And also, sometimes you just have to look at it. You know, I have to look at not at what I feel I have to keep doing, but I have to look at what I'm trying to accomplish, which is what I'm trying to accomplish is to influence this person toward a certain behavior. And gosh, if this isn't working, maybe I should think about it, you know, instead of just continuing to hit my head against the wall. Now, that may require self-control, creativity, investigation, drawing other resources. I mean, many things may have to happen, but that's all better than just continuing to be hysterical in a useless way. I mean, this is when I was having that feud with David. It was like, this is not working, you know. So what am I really trying to do? Am I trying to have the satisfaction of being mad? Am I trying to have the feeling that I can't give up, I have to keep trying, I'm his mother? Or do I really want to influence this person? And if I really want to influence him, I have to stop thinking about my role in it. I have to start thinking about him or her and what's really going to happen. And if in my trying to do it, I'm getting divided from my spouse, then there is something wrong with this picture. Unless my spouse is really, you know, so unworthy of regard that I really know. I mean, which does happen, you know, that the father or the mother really is just too out of it and I have to take over. That does happen. I want to give credit, but I don't think that's what we're talking about. I know you both. So if what I'm doing is separating me from my spouse, there is something wrong with this picture. And just inherent, that's your chipmunk voice in my kind, you know. If we're really disagreeing, somewhere there's a mistake here. And just because he tells me I'm too emotional and too involved doesn't mean that he's wrong. And just because he's told me that 7,000 times and sometimes he is wrong doesn't mean that he's always wrong. And just because she says to you, look, there's something really at stake here, and she's hysterical about it, doesn't mean that she's wrong. It means that there's something wrong with this picture, and we both have to stand back. But, you know, we stand back, we pray, we ask Divine Mother, we pray. Here's a great technique. Pray to the superconscious of your own child. Pray to your child, not only for them, but to them, which is when you calm down and go into your own spirit, just pray to their soul and say, what are you trying to make happen here? You know, and I know we're all on the same side. You help me figure out what it is that I'm trying to do. And don't think you can just do that once and then it's fine. You know, that has to be like an everyday cycle. Because raising teenagers in this culture is pretty much a mission impossible. It's a very, very hard assignment. So you have to also accept that. But these children chose it. They chose to expose themselves to some of the most unbelievable influences that we can hardly stand, but it's natural to them. You know? That's what Dr. Pfeiffer says, Raising Ophelia. She's about teenage girls. Let me say one more thing, then I'll go on from this. She was talking about a mother that came to her. She was in Omaha, Nebraska, and the problems she felt were so faced were so terrible, she couldn't imagine what was going on in New York City. She said that this mother came to her talking about her daughter, and the mother had decided that she was going to have a real frank discussion with her child about sexuality. And the mother had sort of made the decision that she was really going to tell her daughter that she and her father, the daughter's father, had sex before they'd gotten married. And it was like going to be like a real confession. So she went into her daughter's room to talk to her daughter. And she's sort of like, her daughter has a TV in her room. She's watching MTV. There's a woman in a leather bikini. Right? Just sort of rubbing herself up against some guy, you know, to this throbbing beat. And then there's all these other half-clad women, you know, gyrating all over the place. And it occurs to the mother that maybe she and her daughter are not quite in the same place about this. Because, you know, kids are just like, yeah, it's just a whole different world. And to us, it just looks so, I mean, us or some people, it's just so unbelievable what's going on with teenagers. This is my opinion. And so I just say, Jai Shiva, this is changing yugas and everything is getting torn to bits. I used to be very upset about it. Now I say, Jai Shiva. But it's not unnatural to them. They are teenagers. It is impossible. It's terribly grotesque. It's totally warping their minds. It's just awful. But it's their karma.
Well, I think from a marriage standpoint, what's tempting to fall into is we stop pushing against each other and we start looking at each other's junk on the kid. So the kid becomes a vehicle to still get at each other's faults and what we want changed, what we see exactly.
Oh, I see what you mean. You've given up on each other and now you're trying to force the child. Yeah, that's probably very true. Well, all I can say is it's not a real good idea. But you might have already known that. But Shelley, you know what it comes back to? Self-control, 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 self-control. Everybody imagines that there's some kind of a relationship in which I don't have to exercise self-control. There is. It's called the relationships that end. It's called temporary relationships. Otherwise, life is about self-control. And when you finally actually just like really get that, it's not really as hard as you think because you're not fighting it all the time. You just realize, of course, I have to be disciplined and aware, and I cannot just let myself run riot. Because if I let myself run riot, I get to do it all by myself, which is probably what you don't want. You know, I mean, you alienate everybody eventually. Self-control. Thinking of other people's welfare, true maturity relating to realities other than my own. But then the reverse of that is, that's true spirituality, is to discipline the ego and relate from the soul. And the strange thing about it is once you stop thinking it's awful, it actually turns out to be marvelous because you really get happy. But you have to work at it. But once you realize that the pleasure of living correctly is so much greater than the pain of living badly. And the effort required is nothing compared to the joy of doing it. But there's this, Yogananda describes it, he says, help me to understand that the ways of virtue, though appearing difficult and unpleasant at first, will in fact bring me great joy, and help me to remember that the ways of vice, though honey-covered as though they seem, are actually poison in fact. You know, but you get that after a while. It gets so that you just do the wrong thing and it feels so bad you just don't want to do it anymore. And everybody has that in certain areas. You know, in certain areas you just cannot do the wrong thing. In other areas you always do the wrong thing. But someday, and by wrong I mean the least happiness producing. I'm not talking about sin. But you realize that eventually you will realize that, you know, this emotional outburst in which I vent all my things like that, it won't feel good anymore. Because the consequences will be so in front of you, just as you start, you won't even start. And even the doing of it won't feel good. And so slowly by slowly, it's a matter of falling down and standing up, falling down and standing up, and just keep going. And it'll work out. Okay, is there another question? Otherwise I'll answer. I was asked during the break about this question of how you work from the head and the heart both. And that directly relates to what I forgot a little while ago. I read a very interesting article by Joseph Chilton Pierce, and he was reporting on the research of others, and this is something that's coming out all over the place, that the same gray matter that's in the brain is actually in the heart. And I'm not a scientist, so I'm just going to repeat this like the way it feels to me. They've actually figured out that the same way that the brain functions, there's a function in the heart that's just the same. That we really actually think from our hearts, even in a physiological sense. Now, isn't that interesting?
What's the name of the article again?
If you look up I can't actually say. It's related to something called HeartMath. There's some kind of a website called HeartMath that you can look up. HeartMath, HEARTMATH. I haven't looked it up, but that's what I've been told. And but the point of it is that it's not really that different what goes on between the two parts of ourselves. And someone was asking just like, how do you really become, because he talks about how you refer reason to the heart and you refer heart to the reason. And it's almost like you can feel it whenever you're too much in your head. You know, can't you just feel it? You feel kind of squished. There's just like this sense of being squished, and everything else gets really dull and dry. When you want to make a decision or when you're in some kind of a conflict, just in the way that we meditate at the point between the eyebrows, you actually can also just put your attention in your heart and just sort of generate energy in the heart it's like you keep your attention at the point between the eyebrows, but you feel the energy in the heart. That's what I'm trying to say. Because you don't really want to take your attention off the spiritual eye and put it in the heart, because once you get here, you start getting closer to the lower chakras and the energy can so easily get pulled into emotion. I mean, that I'm saying that to a lot of you who I've talked to a lot about this. But the heart is a delicate spot, because the energy from the heart can either rise or get pulled down. Okay, and if it gets pulled down, by the down in this, I mean it gets more and more identified with ego and more identified with you separately. Whereas if you keep your attention to the spiritual eye, this is the part of yourself that keeps you connected to the superconscious. So you don't really want to put your concentration in the heart, because then you're too likely to get drawn away. You keep your concentration here, but you keep your awareness in the heart. And then you hold up to the spiritual eye with a feeling in the heart, just what is it that you're asking to do? And it can be described as simple as that, but you just have to practice it. What does this feel like? You just ask your question. I know that sounds reasonable, but what does this really feel like? And at the same time, you say, I know this feels good, but is it reasonable? And Swamiji encourages us to go both ways, because a lot of times women or people who are very feely-oriented resist bringing things to a clear focus. They prefer the sort of vague feeling about things, and they get resentful when someone wants them to bring their feelings to a clear focus. But why not? If it's true, it can also be brought to a clear focus, and if you resist it, it's probably because it's not on point enough. That doesn't mean you have to become super articulate, but you shouldn't resist someone else's desire to have you just sort of like, where does this come from? Because true intuition stands also the test of reason. It may be bigger than reason. It doesn't stand the test of cold reason, but it stands the test of calm reason. Because calm reason says, well, this makes sense. I can understand. I can see how that connects. But sometimes in order for the reasonable person to understand the feeling person, the reasonable person has to also get the feeling. You know, I know sometimes when Swamiji suggests things, sometimes he makes suggestions that for directions we should go or things that we should do that I just don't quite get because I can't quite capture the reasons for it. And I used to always just sort of struggle with it, you know, sort of fight it with words. And then at a certain point, I realized instead of trying to make it clear with my mind like this, I would just accept what he said in my heart. And by that, what I meant by that was I would not resist it. I would just take it in. That's not so mysterious. You just take it in. Oh, that's an interesting idea. And then often when I take it into my heart, it would be like, oh, I would get it. I would catch it, like on an intuitive level. Oh, I see what he's trying to say. And then all of a sudden, my heart would communicate to my mind. And then I'd have all the reasons at the same time. But until I relaxed enough and just took it in, when I was just trying to understand it, I couldn't understand it until I let my heart have it also. And it's part of like trying so hard to understand, often you're just so busy that you don't allow yourself to feel it. And then you make an intuitive leap, that's the only word for it, that then becomes a reason and you get it. Does that make sense? Now, that's not complicated. It's not always easy, but it's not complicated. And it's perfect in the male-female relationship when the person you love the most in the world or that you're closest to in the moment is trying to get something across to you. You need to be in both places because that's what you're trying to do with each other, is to be in both places. So whichever side of it you're resisting, just try to be in both places and let the energy come in. And you'll suddenly find that they'll link up with each other all of a sudden. And when they link up with each other, then you're both male and female, and whoever you're relating to, you can relate to better because you've got whatever the complement is. Do you see? Does that make sense? All right, that's my whole story for tonight. Is there anything else? All right, thank you. Good night. And we have whatever third class. We're reading two more chapters next week, 6 and 7. Okay.